covers the helmet contains. As far as the narrative, he stops the foot washing, and the narrative goes no longer. There's a lot of speculations as to why, and probably to me it has more to do with when he's riding versus anything else, versus personal preference, or whether or not he believes that the Lord's Supper is important. I believe he believes it's important. He just didn't need to include it in his gospel. So one of the speculations would be that you'll notice that when Paul is speaking to the Corinthians about practicing the Lord's Supper, he's got all kinds of criticism for them because of the controversy that surrounds them. He has members that are doing it in chaos. They're drinking, they're hogging the emblems, they're eating him as food. He has to talk about partaking of it in a worthy manner. By the time that John writes this, is that controversy something that he's fed up with? And he doesn't want to include it in the lesson that communion is supposed to give us. Could it be that writing from Ephesus, he wants to cut through the ritual? And is it being done right? And is it being done in the right place? And is it being done in the right order? Maybe he wants to cut through that controversy and get us to something pure. And that is what all ritual is supposed to do for us. That is, teach us about the love of God. He emphasizes the foot washing as an act of faith and baptism. Maybe that's what he needed the church to look to get back to after nearly 100 years in existence. We're not sure. Or maybe it's to show us something else. That communion isn't restricted or shouldn't be to a time or a place or a location. Because the gospel itself contains maybe the most powerful allusions to the Lord's Supper without ever having to mention the Lord's Supper. Maybe he wanted to put communion in the center of our lives rather than confine it to a ritual. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain, sat down with his disciples. And the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near, and his daddy shared with us. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said it to test him. Test him. For he himself knew what he was going to do. According to verse 4, Passover is there. Whenever John mentions Passover, John will either begin to allude to the cross or to the Lord's Supper. And when we think about it, communion is supposed to allude to the cross also, isn't it? So there are a lot of images here from the Exodus. The feeding of all these pilgrims would remind them all of the miraculous feeding of Israel in the wilderness. In Numbers 11, Moses is faced with a large crowd complaining about a lack of food. Jesus is faced with this. And in verse 5, a slightly panicked Philip gives this question back to Jesus. Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat? I hear Moses' voice. Lord, how am I going to feed all of these people? The most active disciples in this story are who? Philip and Andrew. By the way, one of the reasons I believe that John technically doesn't mention himself, technically he mentions not himself in all the Gospel of John. John never calls himself by name in the Gospel of John. He refers to himself as the one who Jesus loved. The reason being is that he believed he didn't want to make himself the center of the story. He wants you to concentrate on who? On Philip and Andrew. Because they're the humans that will make it happen. They're the most active in this. And he wants us to make sure that. And I've always loved the question that he asks, where are we to buy bread for these to eat? It's not just that he's testing him. He's also leading in a particular direction because Philip sees this as an economic problem. We don't just wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't even touch this crowd. He sees it as an economic problem. So Jesus kind of led in there, didn't he? Where are we to buy bread? I used to think that it was a great example of Jesus' sense of humor. Tongue in cheek. Yes. I still think he could be. It's the obvious one to ask. He's from Bethsaida. This is his neighborhood. If they were going to go buy bread, Philip would be the one they would send because he would know where to buy it. But Jesus, by asking an obvious human solution to the problem, is highlighting the supernatural aspect of what he's about to do. By the way, there's no significance to the numbers 5,200, 5, or 2. No particular significance to it, except this, that there are facts that are recalled in order for us to know that what's about to happen just might be a tad bit incredible. Jesus took the loaves and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. He takes the loaves, and when he had given thanks, this right here, this is what makes it an allusion to the Lord's Supper. Because he did the same thing that night. He took it, he raised it, he broke it, and he gave thanks. It's the Greek word eucharisteo, where we get the word Eucharist from. It's the verb form of Eucharist. Eucharist simply means blessing. What's about to happen is a blessing. So he did it at the Lord's Supper. He gives thanks, notice, for the 5 loaves. That's what he gives thanks for. And remember, when we're saying loaves of bread, don't picture 5 loaves of bread that you purchase at the supermarket. It's probably 5 pieces of pita is what it looks like. 5 tortillas, maybe no bigger than my hand. Notice, he gives thanks for the loaves. He doesn't give thanks for the multiplication. It hasn't happened yet. He gives thanks for what he has. He gives thanks for the human element in all of this. And the human element is that a mom baked these for her little boy earlier that morning. But when he gets done feeding, stuff. Not everybody got something. They're stuffed. Do you remember after the quails all flew into Israel and kind of were sacrificed? They ate until it was coming out of their noses, literally, is what the Hebrew says. The bread and the fish are coming out of these people's noses. He stuffed them. Now you have a significant number. One basket for each disciple to carry away. We have a tendency to thank God after it's been multiplied. We have a tendency not to thank him for the portion that in no way possible is going to feed us. We don't have a tendency to thank him for that. We have a tendency to thank him for the multiplication. Jesus did not thank him for the multiplication. Thanked him for those 5 loaves. John doesn't let us forget the faith we need to get what we need. The leftovers were from the 5 barley loaves, not the divine multiplication. Just what communion teaches us. 1 loaf of bread, his body, broken for all who would believe. Enough for everyone, not just a morsel. Not just life, but I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. John, I believe, more than makes up for not having a narrative of the Lord's Supper. Do you agree? The theology of it is quite clear. Human-made emblem, divine multiplication equals what? The bread of life. Take this, eat, so you may live. But the best part, the very best part, oh, by the way, before I get there, the reason that also there may not be a direct narrative of the Lord's Supper is that you have two miraculous feedings of bread, and you also have a serving, a miraculous serving of wine, where at the wedding of Cana, Jesus blesses the dead ritual cleansing of the religion of the day and gives wine, wine that brings joy, wine that brings life back to the party. It's a direct allusion to the Lord's Supper. But the best part of this allusion to communion, the best part is this, is that his allusions to communion are in the context of everyday life. They're not gathered in the synagogue. They're not celebrating a feast. It's towards Passover, but they're not celebrating Passover. It doesn't have anything to do with the religious ritual of coming to church or anything else. It's done in the context of a picnic lunch. It's done in the context of every day getting together and having a meal. One is on a hillside overlooking the sea. The next one will actually be on the beach. In one sense, he's telling us the communion is not confined to church buildings or where the right service is performed. He's telling for those of us who walk with Jesus, every meal, every day, every time we eat with him, it's a sacrifice. What's for dinner today? Eucharist. Really? We're not a church. Jesus says, John says, you don't need that. Every meal is Eucharist. The communion table, the dinner table, the picnic basket, they're all alike. And Jesus, partake in a ritual that I've pointed out before. Church needs ritual. We need physical illustrations of the divine transactions that have been happening for us ever since he died on the cross. We need solid things we can put our fingers on. We need it. But we also need to maintain, to make it healthy. And then to understand that what it's teaching us of has nothing to do, possibly, with the ritual or the way that we perform it or the words that we say or what we believe is actually happening. We need ritual. Yet we need communion every day, every moment. Desire of Ages, page 600. Our Lord has said, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man, drink his blood, he had no life in you. For my flesh is meat indeed, my blood is drink indeed. John 6:53-55. This is true of our physical nature. To the death of Christ we owe even this earthly life. The bread we eat is the purchase of his broken body. The water we drink is bought by his spilled blood. Never one saint or sinner eats his daily food, but he is nourished by the body and the blood of Christ. The cross of Calvary is stamped on every loaf. It is reflected in every water spring. All this Christ has taught in appointing the emblems of his great sacrifice. The light shining from the communion service in the upper chamber makes sacred the provisions for our daily life. The family board becomes the table of the Lord, and every meal a sacrament. For us to think that we feed ourselves is as foolish as feeding 5,000 with 5 tortillas. Communion's life, eternal baptized in ritual here, yes. And I hope today that when we get up from this table, we take it with us into all aspects of our life. That every meal become a sacrament. This is all we got in this world until He comes. This is what we have. In the Gospel of Luke, Jesus said, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you. Why? Because I need to do it with you before I suffer. He needed the communion with His friends before He was about to accomplish what He was about to accomplish. We need this today. Because in some way, we're going to leave from here and we're going to go out and we're going to suffer. We suffer living on this planet. We suffer trying to live out the gospel. We suffer when we don't. We suffer when we fail. We need this communion. Amen. I have eagerly desired because I need this with you, He says. And to show us how much He needs it, He said He won't do it again until we're with Him. He won't set this table. He won't sit at this table. I believe He's got the wine in the fridge and the bread in the oven waiting for us, but He won't set the table until when?